Well, first of all, let me just welcome you. I know that we have some guests with us this morning, folks from different churches, and then I see a lot of familiar faces here. So wherever you come from or whoever you are, we're excited that you're here. Want to just briefly walk you through what our hope is today with our time. Did everybody get a notebook? If you did not get a notebook, there's plenty at that back table. You'll probably want to get that. We're going to be walking through it and utilizing it throughout the morning. Our hope is this. Our hope is to be helpful. That's really our hope. There's a new strand or a new current that's coming through, and it's emerging out of the church, and it's called the emergent church. It's an interesting phenomenon going on, and we hope to do our best to explain what it is and what it might not be, and some things that are helpful and some things that might not be so helpful. But just want to walk through what our hope is with the schedule. I'm going to open off this morning and talk about where we are now. We want to kind of paint the landscape and get a good idea of what's going on, what's the feeling now, where are we now, theologically, sociologically, what's going on right now. And then Jeff Ashley, and this is Jeff right here. Jeff serves as the discipleship resource pastor at the church. He is heavily involved in the group's ministry and the writing of curriculum and theology and on and on and on. Has a very, very big job here at the church. And so Jeff is going to take us back and is going to answer this question. Where have we been? Where have we come from? We know this much, that it's hard to understand where we're going if we don't know where we've been. And so we're going to take a look back. We're going to find out how this whole thing got kicked off with the birth of Christ. And we'll walk through church history quickly, but we'll walk through church history. We'll take a quick break about 10:30 for about 10 minutes, and then we'll reconvene and try to answer this question, Jeff and I will, where are we going? And so our prayer is that this is helpful for you. By far and away, one of the most popular questions that we get emailed is the Village an emergent church? Okay? And so as we started fielding that question more and more and more, we decided, you know what, we might want to just go ahead and put this together and do a teaching on it that we can capture and hopefully be a help to our church and to other churches. So I'm going to pray, and then we'll jump into it. Father, thank you so much for our time together. I know that I keep saying that we want to be helpful, and that really is our heart, Lord. And we want to be helpful because in your word you tell us that the church is to build up and to edify and construct. And that's what we want to do this morning. We want to build up your church. I pray that we would be clear, that we'd walk in humility. Father, that most importantly, that your son would be honored and glorified. It's in his name that we pray. Amen. All right. If you got your notebooks, just go ahead and turn right there to the Where Are We Now section. I just want to open up by saying just a few comments. The tide of our culture is very, very interesting right now. We find ourselves in an interesting place. It's unlike any other time in history in some respects. But then there's some things that are familiar. There's some things that you might notice when Jeff talks about where we've been, some things that keep popping up as history tends to repeat itself. But we find ourselves right now in a place of competing worldviews, competing spiritualities. And this whole first section is entitled Confrontation, Not Tactics. And here's why. The gospel confronts. Okay? The gospel is confrontational in its very nature. Now, confrontation does not mean that I walk up to somebody and punch them in the face. Okay? That's not what we're saying when we say that the gospel is confrontational. What we're saying when we talk about the confrontation of the gospel is simply this, that there are two competing worldviews. There are different and competing opinions. There are different lenses by which to see the gospel lens and the secular lens or the religious lens. If you were here this past weekend, we talked about that. There's different ways of seeing, and the gospel confronts. It engages culture and it confronts. And so the church today has bought into this idea that all we need to do is create different tactics. We just need a different plan. We need to market a little bit differently. We need to set this up different, create this program, and all of a sudden, what will happen is that people will begin to like us again, which is not necessarily the biblical call to faith. The call to faith is to bring light into darkness. The biblical call is to bring a message of truth that bears upon falseness. And so that's where we find ourselves today. And the challenge for us and the challenge for the church is that there are competing worldviews. We're leaving this modernistic mindset, okay, where reason was the new high priest. If it did not filter through the lens of reason, then it wasn't acceptable. And we're leaving that idea of reason and entering into a postmodern skepticism. And a lot of that came about in the middle of the last century, where we were faced with horrible, horrible disasters that we did, i.e. wars and devastations, political ideologies that were evil, that absolutely crushed people. When we saw millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of people perish, all under the hands and the idea of the God of reason. So now a new age is being brought forward, and that new age is skeptical about reason. And that's kind of the mix that we find ourselves in. We're not totally there yet. We haven't left modernity, but we're not totally into postmodernity. And so we have these competing worldviews. But maybe more importantly now is we have competing spiritualities. And what I mean here is this competing idea of spirituality is that we can be saying the same words and mean something entirely different. Jesus is all through pop culture. He's very cool. He's very hip. In fact, he's even my homeboy at times, right? I mean, this is just where we find ourselves. Everybody's chiming in. Everybody has something to say. Everybody feels that what they have is helpful. And we're going to get to why that seems to be the case. But the two competing spiritualities are this, and this will be a lens by which we understand a lot today. This language comes from David Wells' book, Above All Earthly Powers, where he says this: you have one spirituality that he's going to call eros, and one spirituality called agape. And the eros spirituality is this, that the sinner finds God. The sinner at his own leisure finds God. Listen to this: as authentic as the human questing may be, it is still, in biblical terms, unbelief. That's a powerful statement. It's a very, very powerful statement. If you take eros spirituality and put it right up against agape spirituality, which says this: God finds the sinner. God comes and finds the sinner. There are two totally different ways to approach the same idea of spirituality, but it's the sea that we swim in now. For instance, if you have looked on the podcast, if you look on podcasts, just nationally, what's going on? If you look in the religion section right now, hands down, number one, and has been for weeks, is Oprah. Oprah and Eckhart Tolle have been number one on the podcast for the religious podcast. And what they're offering is this idea of a new earth. It's a class that she's so helpfully giving us on spirituality. Okay? And I say that a little tongue-in-cheek, but she is. She's providing a new lens by which to understand spirituality. If you've listened to any of it, it's very, very, in my opinion, scary. But what it is, it's popular. It's out there. Everybody is involved in it. People are thinking about it. It's kind of chic now to be spiritual. But when we talk about spirituality now, we have to say, what do you mean? What do you mean when we talk about spirituality? And then another thing is strategy versus tactics. And I'm just going to read this. Church talk about reaching the culture turns almost inevitably into a discussion about tactics and methodology, not about worldviews, not about what people believe. It's only about tactics and not about strategy. It's about seduction. How do we get people in the doors? And not about truth. About success. How many people can we get? And not about confrontation. Confrontation is always at the heart of the relation between Christ and culture, because that relation is one of light in its relation to darkness. Truth to false belief and holiness to what has fallen. It is a confrontation that can take place only if the church is engaged with culture. Catch that. Confrontation only happens if there's engagement with culture. But it is confrontation nonetheless. And so we're going to talk today at great length about how we get involved in the conversation. the Emergent Church. That's a helpful way that they set things up. They talk about the conversation, being a part of the conversation, and that they're, you know what they've done? They've re-engaged the world in conversation. All we're saying today is that we want to re-engage with content in the conversation. We want to bring something to it. It's not enough just to have people fill these rooms. It's not enough just to have people coming and numbers growing. That's not success. Something has to be put forward to believe. And the scriptures have opened that up and declared what that is. And that's where we're going with our time this morning. I want to read this quote from Irenaeus. Irenaeus is an early church father who wrote in probably one of his most famous works called Against Heresy. He says this: "The apostles were sent to find those who were lost and to bring sight to those who did not see and healing to the sick. So they did not speak to them in accordance with their previous opinions, but by the manifestation of the truth. For no men of any kind would be acting rightly if they told blind men who are already beginning to fall over the precipice to continue in their dangerous ways, as if it were a sound one, and if they would come through this thing all right. What doctor, when wishing to cure a sick man, would act in accordance with the desires of the patient and not in accordance with the requirements of medicine? Ignorance, the mother of these things, is driven out by knowing the truth." That's Irenaeus. So here's where we find ourselves. If the church is to lovingly engage in today's spiritual conversation, she must bring distinctively biblical content to it. If the church is to engage, she must bring distinctively biblical content through it. The lens by which we'll walk through this is the lens of eros versus agape spirituality. Here's what I mean. The reality and the biblical truth is this: we are a fragmented people. We are not innocent. We are a fragmented people. We are not innocent. If you watch American Idol, and I'm not saying that I do, I just happened to catch it the other night. I remember during the Idol Gives Back scene, right? David Cook, who's kind of the hot guy, is probably going to win if you're keeping up with that kind of deal. He sang a song by Our Lady Peace called "We Are All Innocent." This is where we find ourselves. To millions and millions of people, we are all innocent. This whole idea that we're okay, that we're put together well. We've placed in here some ideas that if you want to go and read this further and study for yourselves, what you'll want to study is hamartiology, which is the study of sin and the atonement, the work of Christ in his life and death to earn our salvation. Eros spirituality is going to say this: human nature itself, the fact that you are, offers access to God. The very fact that we are here has entitled you and me access to God. That's eros spirituality. You see, when people are born, now listen to this quote, and this: when people are born, they're neither good nor evil. They make a choice between the two as they mature. 70% of Americans agree with that. 74%. The scary thing is this, that 52% of evangelicals agree with that. 52% of those who would call themselves evangelical believers agree with the idea that you're born morally neutral. You see, it's a great idea. It's just not a biblical one. And this is where confrontation comes in. It's a great idea. It's a popular idea. It's just not a biblical idea. It's something that's just not distinctively Christian. The idea in eros spirituality is that there is no sin. The sacred is always available to us. We presume our own innocence in this whole deal. This is the context in which we find ourselves in today. If you were to go across college campuses, this is the prevailing mindset. This is what is being taught. This is what's going forward. And honestly, this is just the rebirth of an old heresy called Pelagianism. Jeff will talk about that more at length. You can read the footnote later. But again, some things that we see today are nothing but recycled thoughts and heresies from time and time again. That's why we'll look at it. And here's something that I think is interesting: the idea of consumerism. We know that we live in a consumeristic culture. You and I are inundated with it. And here's where it plays itself out in regards to eros spirituality. It, material or deity, is there when we want it. Whenever I want it, I can go get it. It's always available at my convenience. You see, what's happening here is that self now is the new God. Self has come forward as the one who is to be bowed down. Whatever you believe, whoever you are exalted. I am exalted. Self has become the new God. Because there's no one else that you can look to trust other than yourself. But agape spirituality says this. Access to God is prevented by sin. You can't reach him. You can't get him. He's not to be found by your groping. It's only by his mercy and his grace that he would condescend to me. He's not available at my any whim. Only by his grace. Only by his grace. We see a loss of morality or the understanding of morality. Seeing the world as evil but without a conception of sin. I remember there was a lady that I was in a reading group with who understood sin corporately. She could look around and say, that's evil. That's wrong. That's horrendous. That's evil. But she did not and has not, to my knowledge, ever come to grips with the fact that she's a part of that. That sin is also personal. It's not just corporate. It's a personal reality. And it's interesting, and it seems to be an interesting paradox for us to look out and say, that is evil, but without then contending that I'm evil. Where does that evil come from? So we lose this idea of personal sin. Morality is lost. The plague of self-esteem, the sacred is found in the self. We talked about that, that the self has become the new God. It's all about how I let myself out so that I can be all that I can be. And now we put forward a new therapeutic gospel that is simply making myself better, because the new and improved Josh is really all I need. And so we find ourselves with this idea that we are innocent people. And the biblical reality is this, that we're fragmented. The next is truth is public, not private. The current spirituality has internalized truth and reality and provided the space for each person to make their own definition and interpretation of truth and reality, i.e. relativism revealed through individualism. Jeff will talk about this as well, but Rene Descartes comes out with his famous declaration, I think, therefore I am. And that statement has spun completely out of control and landed us here today. I think, therefore I am. All authority rests in me. The very fact that I am here is because I am thinking it. I think, therefore I am. Authority rests in me. And if authority rests in me, I am the sole arbiter of truth. I'm not going to infringe on your truth. Truth is simply personal. But the biblical confrontation is this. Truth is public. Truth is objective. It is out here for the world to see. The gospel is good news because it is objectified reality. It's out there to be tasted and touched and smelt. It's for the senses. It's for the humanity, it's for the masses. The gospel has gone out in truth, and that truth is public. It's public. The resurrection is public. The crucifixion is public. The ministry of Christ is public. And he has said some things that wars against the idea that truth resides within me. If you want to study up more on this, you can study theology proper, which is the study of God, bibliology, hamartiology, and again, the atonement. So if we look at through the lens of eros and agape spirituality, eros says this, what works for me? What's true for one, therefore, may not be true for another. Agape says this, what is true corresponds to reality. And if you look at these texts, Christ is leaving a witness. His witness is for the world to see. It is not internalized. It is out there. It is on display. It is to be seen. Creation is a witness. Israel was a witness. It is for the world to see. God respects no sacred space other than the one he is filling. He respects no self-constructed sacred spaces. We find ourselves with a policy of toleration. We tolerate everything except what I have subjectively deemed absolutely intolerable. And then the plague of individualism. Again, this was born out of Rene Descartes, I think, therefore I am. An individualist who uses the elaborate means of worship solely for the purpose of gaining his own security, integration, and safety. we find ourselves where self is God. It's really all about me. I find myself living in the suburbs. I don't know if you guys live in the burbs. I do. This whole idea of security and safety is a tremendous idol that I battle against. I don't know if you battle against this. It's the very idea of suburbia, security and safety. Let's pull away from the dangers of the city. Let's pull away from the dangers of what's going on down there so that we can be safe and secure, as if we're in control of that. But you know what? The idea is that the self dictates and determines what this is going to look like and how this is going to happen. And so I live life for me. And why wouldn't I? Because I know what's best. I determine truth, and I know what I need, and I'm entitled to it because I'm a hardworking person. And then the third confrontation is this, that God is personal. He is not impersonal. Christian faith, then, is about listening. Listening to the word of God. Eros, spirituality, is about speaking. It speaks because there is no one to whom it can listen. To me, this is one of the most fascinating little points. The view of Revelation, Revelation is the way in which God has revealed himself to us. There's a couple of ways that you can classify this, that God has revealed himself in a real general way through creation, and that God has revealed himself in a special way by his words and his works. Okay? The view of Revelation, the Eros view, is this, that I'm speaking. Why? Because I'm self-sufficient. I have something to say. So in my quiet times of prayer and meditation, it's really about me. It's about me emptying myself and me. It's me going somewhere. It's me thinking and providing. And the reason why is because there's no one who can provide other than me. If I don't get in touch and in tune with me, who am I going to get in touch and in tune with? But agape spirituality is this. It's listening. It's waiting for the God on high to summons. It's listening, and that is grace, so that when he condescends, he comes down, he fills, he speaks, he has something to say. It's a summons versus sigh. It's on the next page, and it says this, if God has not first spoken of himself, there can be no authentic human speaking of him, because that speaking reveals only human longing and intuition. There is then no actual speaking about God, and the only listening in Eros spirituality is the one which all that is heard is its own yearnings reverberating around the self. That's frightening. That's absolutely frightening. But this is where we find ourselves. This is where we are today. Competing worldviews, competing spiritualities, and those competing spiritualities are Eros versus Agape. God finds the sinner in agape and grace versus Eros. I will go to him and consume him at my convenience, which is false. So when we talk about the very landscape in which we find ourselves in, it's important that we say, what do you mean? What do you mean? The church's charge is to proclaim. The church's charge is to be distinct and to proclaim a gospel that confronts false teaching, that confronts false realities, that brings light into a dark place. This does not necessarily mean that we're talking solely about the emergent movement. It means talking about engaging the culture in which we live. The lost, those who don't know, those who don't see, those who are stuck in the self, who find themselves just spinning around the vortex and isolation of themselves. Listen to this conclusion, and it's strong. Agape spirituality and Eros spirituality, therefore, are not variations upon a common theme, but stark alternatives. In the one, God reaches down in his grace. In the other, the sinner reaches up in self-sufficiency. Not only are they entirely different in their structures and motivations, but God's reaching down into someone's life actually excludes the possibility of that person reaching up. There is no possibility of synergism here, of God's grace and agape cooperating with the human desire of Eros.
These spiritualities belong in two entirely different worlds. God's sovereignty exercised in the one excludes the humanly seized sovereignty exercised in the other. His grace is only grace when it does what no human effort or desire can do. And I'll close with this image of confetti because it's a helpful metaphor for seeing the world in which we live now. It's simply like confetti. It's meaningless. It has no distinct pattern. It just kind of falls where it goes. You can't tell one from the other. It shows the idea of fragmentation and disconnection, that this confetti is not linked with this confetti. You just throw it out and it just trickles down until it finds its place. And this is the reality in which we find ourselves. This is the world of isolation in which most of our neighbors live. This whole idea of confetti, a life of meaninglessness, of disconnection and fragmentation. And the isolation and the loneliness that's created from eros spirituality, which tells me, no, I just got to keep trying a little bit harder. I got to keep recognizing, digging deeper within, finding the inner child or looking here or going this way. If I simply do this, then I'll be okay. Then I'll be okay. But the hope is that we would cease striving and beg for him to condescend, that his grace might come down. That's the hope. Not that I would reach up, but that he might come down. Let me pray. Jeff's going to walk us through where we've been.